flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Here comes a future candidate right here.
Are we in a dream here?
Yep.
Anybody have any added agenda items?
I'd like to talk about complexity and simplifying.
Talk about what?
The complexity and trying to simplify some of our stuff.
Okay, all right. We'll put that down under number 8, if that's okay with you.
Yep.
Norman?
Nope, I'm good.
Okay. Public comments from our large audience, do you have any? Anything you'd like to say?
Not yet.
Okay, well, you'll get another shot at it.
Okay.
Karen? Okay. Has everybody had a chance to go over the meeting minutes?
Yes.
Yes.
Any additions, subtractions, or anything that you don't like to see?
Not for me.
All right, then I'll take a motion to approve the meeting, the minutes for August 21st.
I'll make a motion to approve them.
Second.
Okay, any additional comments? Vote?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Passed without a dissension. Okay. It's all up to you.
Okay. So at the last meeting when we talked about public nuisances, code enforcement, and abatement, we had on our little white paper board there, what is that thing called? Not a white paper board. Our
flip chart.
Flip chart, thank you. I'm losing it. We talked about all kinds of things, and we realized in their own way they all have varying levels of importance, and they all are important. So you sent me back to look at crafting a code that would, one, identify the public nuisances, things that were fairly common to what we've heard in Lapine, and then provide for abatement, which is a resolution. Abatement is nothing more than a process for getting something cleaned up in its simplest form. And then there are penalties, and as we talked about last time, those penalties are infractions that are set by the state. And I will continue to work with Jeremy on what authorities have to be adopted by the council so that you can go through, write a ticket and abate something, or file a lien against a property because you've had to clean it up, you meaning the city in general. What I'd like to do tonight, with your permission, is go through this page by page, because I think it's really important that we understand this. If there are changes, we get those done. I know Rick is expecting swift movement on this, and I want to make sure that we're in sync with your goals, most importantly. So, like any other ordinance, this starts off with definitions. Persons, places, private places. What is a livestock animal? And I've listed horses, cows, mule, sheep, pigs, and other animals, but not including dog, cat, household pet, rabbit, or other like animal. Typically dogs, cats, and rabbits and small things like gerbils. Cities don't enforce actions about that. People have tried licensing laws on cats. Bad failure. You know, people just don't waste time on that anymore. Now, if somebody's got a cattery or a puppy mill, that's a whole different story. But this is just regular neighborhood stuff. Fowl is duck, geese, chicken, pigeon, parrot. I threw parrot in because we do have an issue with a parrot, apparently, and other like bird. Fur-bearing animals, there will be a time where we run up against somebody who has wild animals. They get out of hand, particularly weasels, very smelly. It's an interesting business, and it's usually something that you don't find in an urban environment.
I have a I have a question on that one. I put snakes, wolves, and other exotic animals.
Yep, let's add that. And other exotics.
We did have there have been a couple of issues with wolf-dog combinations, you know, in the past, too.
Yeah.
So I don't know, you know. I mean, there are people that have pets.
How about
pets, so.
How about in other exotics and hybrids?
I just think we should have something general in there in case we have some kind of
yeah.
fluky thing.
Right, right. Well, the cats have been bred recently for wild cats. Okay, keep is obvious, owner is obvious. Corrosive substance, I think it's important. Some people can throw things out that leach onto other people's properties. Okay, moving on to animals and fowl, a little deeper look at that. No person may keep a livestock animal in a stable, building, corral, or enclosure located within so many feet of a dwelling, school, church, hospital, public park, playground, or public building.
How many feet?
Well, that's something we need to talk about. Typical setbacks in a residential subdivision are anywhere from 5 to 10 feet. When you think about livestock, the accumulation of manure, feeding schedules, spraying schedules, insecticides that are needed, you're going to need more than just the standard separation. Should a corral that stables goats and sheep be 10 feet from a house? Probably not. I've always liked the width of an urban lot, which is 50, and that may be pretty restrictive, but it's something to talk about.
Is there some way, well, first of all, my question is, do you know of any situations like this now? Are there any situations like this in the city right now that are existing?
Well, where corrals are too close to houses?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
There are some.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So we are going to have to address that, I'm sure, at
yeah.
some point.
So
it's the runoff issue more than anything.
Is it the corral that the horse lives in, or is it the fence?
I think it's both. I think it's both.
Because of the runoff, as you said.
Yeah.
Manure.
And the flies.
Yeah.
Is there some way that we could build in? I mean, I could see where somebody could come in and say, okay, well, it's only 25 feet, but I've made accommodations for this. I have a runoff thing, and it goes the other way. I mean, could people remedy that situation without, you know what I'm saying? I mean, could we work with the people on that?
Mm-hmm. Oh, and what we would do there, let's say we put 50 in, just for as a placeholder. 50 feet unless a management plan has been approved by the city, which would require the person who owns the animal to show us how they've done all those things you just mentioned.
See, I like that better.
Okay.
I mean, I personally, if there are some situations like that, I would still like to get them fixed.
Mm-hmm.
But I also would, you know, I'd like to give people the opportunity to be able to fix them.
Let's
you know,
call
have
it
a way to fix them.
Unless a livestock, because livestock is what we're talking about, a livestock management plan is approved by the city. And what I will put in definitions is what a livestock management plan is. So that's going to include identification and means of controlling feed, insecticide, flies, manure, and any runoff. Something like that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
You feel comfortable with that, Doug?
See, my next door neighbor used to have two horses, and his fence line's about 35 feet from my barn, and the horses are gone. He decided he didn't want horses anymore, which is good, but in the summertime, the flies and the smell
yeah.
is just. And he doesn't clean it up.
Yeah.
It just, wherever they poop is where it stays.
Oh.
But now he's got rid of the horses now, so that will solve itself. but...
Yeah, but if somebody else moves down there, it's the same situation.
50 foot's a minimum.
Yeah, and I was there first.
Yeah.
And the county code said I could not build my barn within 20 feet of the of the line. And so I went back 35 feet.
Yeah.
And it still went far enough.
Yeah. See, now we have, you know, we have horses all around us, and the people all take care of them, so it's never been a problem.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah, obviously, I have horses, and I scoop poop once a day minimum and dispose of it properly, and we don't have any complaints from our neighbors. So, you know, it in different ways, there are different ways to deal with it. My other neighbor collects it in a concrete bin, and then the nursery comes by once a month and hauls it off. So, you know, there are a couple ways to deal with it.
Yeah, a lot of neighbors will take it too, you know.
That's great for the soil.
Yeah, it's good for the soil. So. Yeah.
Okay.
It takes an effort on somebody's part, though, to do it, you know.
So we're going to be a little more flexible there and put the onus on the person to prove to us that something closer can be managed properly. And that's fine, because that's like a little development contract, and if there is a problem, then we can say, you know, you're not living by what you said you would. Okay, B. Anybody owning livestock shall not permit the animal to run at large on the public streets, that's obvious, or public places.
Yeah, but you had something about the parade, but you had it way back. I think that should be moved into that area.
A referral to the parade?
Yeah.
Okay.
It said something about exemptions, but it wasn't connected to anything else, but I thought it probably should be...
Except as provided by section... Parades.
I don't remember where it was now.
I'll find it.
Yeah. But I did see it, and I thought, gee, that should go on the other part.
The thing that bothered me a little bit here, in my own neighborhood, we have to move cattle. Sometimes we have to use the street because everything's fenced up. And we move cattle from one pasture to another. And I didn't know if you had that situation in Lapine. I'm not aware of it, so I didn't put it in.
The only cattle raising around here is outside the city.
Outside the slim, yeah.
Okay.
North.
Okay.
North and a little bit over here in the swamp.
Sure.
But nothing inside the city limits.
Okay. Then I won't worry about them. And no person shall permit the animal to be herded, pastured, or go upon the land of another without permission of the owner. That's pretty obvious. Now, the next, in C, this section does not permit a person from riding, leading, or driving livestock along a public street or highway. And that's kind of what I was talking about, except this is a long... the street or highway. I don't think that's a problem. What I left out was on the right-of-way, so we'll just leave that out. Section 3 has to do with rabbits, fowl, wild, or fur-bearing animals. You can't keep rabbit, fowl, wild, or fur-bearing animals within or about a building, structure, pen, or enclosure located within X feet of a dwelling, school, church, hospital, public park, playground, or public building. And this too, much like the livestock issue, we have to figure out what feet make sense. I'm not sure why you would go less, but typically rabbits and chickens are small.
And they're usually up next to another building, or you know, they're not usually
by themselves.
Out by themselves 50 feet out somewhere.
Yeah. And if you do have wolves or something crazy like that, there are different ways to deal with that. So maybe 25. I don't know how you feel about that. Chickens can be quite annoying.
Yes, they can. Mm-hmm.
Why don't you just keep it 50? Keep it standard and keep it all at 50.
Good.
Then there's no question.
Unless they come to us with a plan, you know.
Yeah.
Yep, and I'll pull the plan down, right. So we're done with that
okay.
one.
Okay.
Okay, area of enclosure. You can't keep livestock animals except within an enclosure having a minimum area of X square feet for each animal. This is a little broad. It has to do with livestock animals, so bigger animals. Typical enclosures, if you think of a stall for a horse, it's a decent size. But this is an enclosure where they're expected to move a little bit. And they have to have a water tank and feeding area and place to go. So the question here is how many square feet for each animal. I think in our own experiences, we can think about the footages that we've seen. I know for a horse, it's good to have 10,000 square feet. That may seem like a lot of space, but for a big animal, they have to have a place to move. And we have some guidance in the zoning ordinance, but not to the area of an enclosure. So if something's penned up, how big should it be?
Is there, there's nothing now? What's Ben have?
Oh, they don't deal with this. They don't have that issue.
You can't have a horse in the city of Ben.
Well, you can, but yeah, but we've never had an issue with this.
No. I don't know.
In the past, it was like, you know, rules that I've run into with the 2 horses and a half an acre, you know, period.
Yeah, we had that in our ordinance.
Quarter acre.
Yeah. Isn't that in our ordinance that we already did?
Two horses, not enclosures.
2 horses per acre.
You're talking about just a stable.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, 10,000 square feet would be locked.
That's a big enclosure. Yeah. That'd be inside and outside.
Yeah. Oh, inside and outside.
Is what I'm thinking.
I don't know. Most of them I've seen around here are like 20 by 20.
Yeah.
Three-sided with a roof and an opening in the front and about 20 square.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And you don't have to worry about something for rabbits or anything like
that. No. Just livestock.
They just go in a regular.
So we're looking at 400 square feet for each animal.
I would say, yeah.
Okay.
A decent size for them.
Yeah. And we'll hear comments in the public meeting, I hope, if that's inappropriate or not. But 20 by 20, unless you've got a big monster horse like my horses, you know, regular horse, that should work. Patty, I'm going to ask you, what do you think?
I think it sounds good.
20 by 20?
Just for the enclosure should be okay.
Yeah, she has normal size horses, so I want to make sure we ask her. Okay, and if we have to adjust these later because of new evidence, we will. So no person can keep a rabbit, fowl, wild, or fur-bearing animal except within an enclosure having a minimum area of 15 square feet for each animal, rabbit or fowl.
Well, see, you usually have those in... You'd have a 20-20, and you'd have a whole bunch of chickens in there, or a whole bunch of rabbits.
A whole bunch of them, yeah.
Yeah, a whole bunch of them.
So 15 square feet, 3 by 5.
You're only allowed 12, so and no roosters.
Around.
Oh, yeah. Sanitary conditions, they have to be properly caged, maintained in a sanitary condition. Manure, droppings, and other materials soiled have to be collected once a week and immediately deposited in fly-proof containers and disposed of in such a manner as to prevent or eliminate fly breeding or nuisance conditions. The presence of live larvae of flies on or about such premises is prima facie evidence of the reproduction or propagation of flies, and the keeping and maintaining of such places is in violation of this ordinance.
What do they do now?
I think, well, it depends on your system. You can put it in an enclosed container, and the heat usually just ends up killing everything. You can leave it outside in a bin and remove it. You can bag it, remove it. Best thing to do is to take it to the collection center where it can be recycled into
set up in bin
compost. Yeah,
a lot of people out here just pile it in the back, let it dry, and burn it. Which
I don't think that's acceptable in an urban
environment. Well, I don't think it is either, but that's what they're doing with it.
Yeah. Well, that's in an urban environment. I don't, you know, in a rural, I don't know. They've been doing, you know.
Yeah, I don't think we want people. Those things smolder forever.
Yeah.
I haven't seen anybody in Kegel. There's all horses all over the place.
If you don't recycle it or compost it, you need to remove it. I don't think you can just allow everything to pile up.
Well, they're doing it now.
Yeah.
Our neighbors who have horses, they have three horses, and they pile it and mix it with dirt.
Compost it.
Three different piles.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Keep it for the years. Yeah. And then he buries some of it, it's not used.
Yeah.
Nothing wrong with that.
After it's mixed with dirt, that's the proper way to do it.
So. It'll heat up.
Yeah.
So I think we have to go be pretty restrictive here. Diseased animals. You can't have one that has a communicable disease to run at large. So if a neighbor sees that all the chickens have no feathers and lice, it's got to be taken care of. It happens.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I can't wait for that. That's going to be so fun. Okay. If you've got a animal infected by disease, that means that the city can immediately seize the animal. So obviously the police or sheriff, and police may not be the right term, but we'll say
animal
authorities.
Control, yeah.
That's normal in a city, and there are times when you'll have to call in the sheriff because somebody's got a puppy mill or cattery. So when those expenses occur, they have to be charged to someone, because the general public shouldn't bear that cost. So it'll be charged to the owner or person who has the animal. And that's part of the city's authority. And that's part of what I want to talk to Jeremy about, is to make sure that we've given ourselves that lawful authority, so that if we subcontract with Deschutes County Sheriff's Department to do these kinds of things, that we have the in-house power to do that. Strange or not, you will find carcasses, people who think it's okay to just leave one on their property somewhere.
What about burying them on the property? There was no mention of that, and I mean, I know a lot of people that bury, you know.
Quite a bit.
If it's deep enough, it should be fine.
They use lime.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, the problem is when it's not deep enough.
Yeah.
But do we need to address that? Or should just not leave it alone?
I think we should be silent on it.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm worried about our upcoming appeal hearing on the smokehouse butcher shop, and I just want to be silent on that for now, because I don't know what's going to happen there. Public exhibitions, this is what you were talking about, shall not apply to animals used in connection with any formally organized exhibition, sale, or parade held within the city of Lapine, provided said animals are properly tethered or caged the day before, day of, and after the event.
Oh, well, maybe that doesn't. Now that I read it, maybe it should be separate. I don't know.
No, I think we should accept this provided by Section 7.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Because you never know. I'm thinking of when I worked in Prineville, we have the cattle run, you know, the stampede goes through town, and they're running wild.
Yeah.
But it's an authorized event, so
yeah.
I don't know, you guys might want to do that someday. Nuisances affecting public health. You can't cause or permit nuisance affecting public health on property owned or controlled by the person. So what they're talking about, and they have examples, open vaults or privies or cesspools, except those constructed or maintained in connection with a construction project. And an open vault or privy, it's unlikely that any of our construction projects are going to have an open cesspool.
Yeah, I had on here that permits, how, in order to do that, wouldn't you have to address that before you did any construction?
Yeah. And so, you know, we want to be very cautious about those things. Things affecting public health include accumulations of debris, rubbish, manure, and other refuse not removed within a reasonable time. So this gives us the authority, a wide range, a big scope, in case there's something we haven't specifically thought of. Stagnant water that affords a breeding place for mosquitoes, that's a deal. That's something to deal with.
Mm-hmm.
We're in a vector anyway. Pollution of a body of water, well, spring, drainage ditch by sewage, industrial waste, or other substances. Let's say we found a auto body paint shop that, instead of having a proper drain, was just funneling it off into their landscape.
Mm-hmm.
No can do. Decayed or unwholesome food offered for human consumption. That's kind of a no-brainer. But we had a situation not too long ago where somebody bought a whole bunch of seed potatoes and decided they weren't going to do anything with them, and they started decomposing. And that created such a heavy ammonia that DEQ had to be called in. These things happen, so we have to be able to deal with it. Telling you all the fun things I've dealt with. Offensive odors, unsanitary conditions, liquid wastes from private premises, cesspools, septic tanks that are in an unsanitary condition or that cause offensive odor, mastics, which are glues, oil, grease, or petroleum products allowed to be introduced into the sewer system by a user connecting to the sewer system. So that gives us broad authority there. Because if somebody doesn't have a grease trap, if somebody is knowingly dumping things into the sewer system, we'll be able to find it. There are different ways to manage the septic or the sewer system where we can see where something's getting gummed up or seals are getting eaten away. Maintenance of property nuisances. It's a public nuisance for anybody to do the certain things, and they're listed as follows. To maintain premises as to permit the same to become so defective, unsightly, or in such a condition of deterioration or disrepair that the same causes appreciable harm or is materially detrimental to the proximal properties or improvements. And I can think of several things in Lapine where if you're a neighboring property, you'd be going, this really can devalue my property value. And that's a critical thing. When I snooped around the woodworker guy at the very entrance to the city, I thought, holy cats, this has got to be taken care of. It's just, he just hasn't taken all his refuse from his projects and done anything with them. They need to be dumpstered and hauled away. It's a big, big mess. And this would be a good example of something so unsightly that we have to deal with it. Okay, and the next one's a little fluffy, but sometimes we need these words to give us broad scope. To keep or maintain such premises so out of harmony or conformity with the landscaping and maintenance standards of adjacent properties as to cause substantial diminution of enjoyment, use of the property value of such adjacent properties, or to keep or maintain to like effect premises with any of the following conditions. And these are many of the things that we had on our list. Buildings which are abandoned, boarded up, or partially destroyed, just like the one on the highway. That needs to be fenced. It's too dangerous for kids. Buildings, broken down or discarded furniture, appliances, wood debris, or equipment in front yards. We have a few of those. Garbage cans strewn over the yards and visible from the street. Unfinished buildings. Dead trees, weeds, and debris. I need a comma. Packing boxes stored in yards and visible to the public. This may be going far, but I don't think it is. When I think of the flea market guy, I see all that stuff. The rain hits it. It starts swelling and exploding. Things start leaking out. It's not organized. It's not durable. And it's a big mess. Manure, waste, or other objectionable accumulations to the annoyance and objection of neighboring property owners, which is kind of like a double thing with livestock that we talked about earlier. Conditions causing noisome or objectionable odors to emanate from the premises. This can be related to a meth house. This can be related to somebody producing something that should be produced in an industrial area instead of a residential area. And there's plenty of things that you can think of that would fit in this category. Any other conditions similar to the foregoing and with like effect, not reasonably necessary to any lawful use or activity conducted on the premises. So if you're in a residential area and somebody's doing something next door, for example, they're rendering fats to make homemade soaps, and it's a horrible smell and it's causing problems and it's not a home occupation, it's really more of a business, this would be an extra assist for us in addition to the land use rules that we have about what's allowed in each zone. So these are more the nuisances. And that's why that's listed there. Section 11 has to do with dumping refuse. No person shall dump or deposit any foul, decayed, putrid, or offensive substance, such as dead animals or fowl, garbage, rubbish, leaves, cans, manure, sewage, or other refuse or rubbish along the bank of or in any canal, ditch, creek, or river, which we have all of those in the city, in any street, alley, park, or upon any lot, place, or premises in the city, whether public or private. I think I've covered every possible instance there. And then pollution of water. It's really important given the bodies that we have, even though it's a small chunk going through the city, we have plenty of a floodplain. So we don't want people to pollute the water of any drinking fountain, hydrant, or any source or place or storage for the water supply of the city or any of its inhabitants. And so that's pretty important. And then public safety is in a separate section. You can't create a hazard by maintaining or leaving in a place accessible to children a container with a compartment more than 1.5 cubic feet capacity and a door lid that locks or fastens automatically when closed and that cannot be easily opened from the inside. Remember all those horror stories when we were kids about people and refrigerators. So we have to deal with that. I can't just say refrigerator. I have to talk about the basic. And then you can't create a hazard by being the owner or otherwise having possession of property on which there's a well, cistern, cesspool, excavation, or other hole or depth of 4 feet or more and a top width of 12 inches or more, or failing to cover or fence it with a suitable protective construction. So somebody calls me and says, they've just drilled X for a footing or a post and they've left it open. And it's this kind of thing. It's an immediate violation. I would send out the sheriff and have him board it up. And that fee, the cost of doing that, goes right to the property owner. When it's a health issue, a hazard issue, we have to take immediate action and then that person has to pay for it. I don't have time to call them, send them a letter. You know, how kids are, they can get into anything.
There again, is that when they go to get a permit, is that addressed? Do they tell them you need to do this?
Yeah.
You know, you'll, okay.
Yeah. And there's always an appeal. If somebody says, look, it was there, and then somebody moved it, and the neighbor said they saw kids playing with it, and somebody comes to council and says, look, I don't want this $75 fine because of all these circumstances. The council can refund that. Okay, so excavations and openings, same thing. You need a suitable fence or barrier when you've got things that are going on that are close to the street, below street grade, and can cause a hazard. For example, a tripping hazard, a difference in elevation. That's really important. We have to be mindful of our disabled community, and you wouldn't want somebody who is visually disabled falling because there's somebody didn't properly protect them with a fence and an alternative route. Okay, so then,
can they... They can't like yellow tape it or anything like that, warning tape or...
Well, you need a fence or barrier. It's the best way to do it. Tape blows away, the blind
can't
see it.
Well, I'm just thinking, if they're in process of doing something, leaving it overnight, or, you know, would they be able to do that?
I'd want them to use construction fencing, or at least orange web fencing.
That's pretty much standard with construction.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, and most projects rent that or use the plastic stuff.
Yeah, okay.
Let's see. B is pretty self-explanatory. C, no person may construct or maintain ventilators, trapdoors, gratings, or similar openings in the public sidewalk.
I didn't even get that. How would that happen?
Well, let's say somebody is developing something close to the public right-of-way, and then they start using the sidewalk. And they're leaving ventilators, or, you know, had to cut part of the sidewalk to get at some utilities, and they didn't really put in the proper, steel plate. I mean, there's all kinds of weird things that can happen. Surface waters and drainage. No person shall permit rainwater, ice, or snow to fall from a building or structure upon any street or sidewalk or to flow across any sidewalk. And the person in charge shall at all times keep and maintain the proper state of repair of adequate drain pipes or drainage system so overflow water accumulating on the roof is not carried across or upon public property. This is important because if somebody's walking underneath an overhang of a public building and there's a whole bunch of icicles and they haven't removed them, that can be quite dangerous. These things will come up and somebody will get whacked and somebody will say, why didn't the city do something? So it's a safeguard to have snow and ice removed as a normal course of doing business. I put that in. I know you guys might think, well, you know,
I think that's pretty much...
Is that okay with you guys?
Well, I think okay. People pretty much accept that around here anyway.
Good. Can't have running water flowing across public properties during freezing weather. Ice and snow. This might get some people excited, but snow needs to be removed, especially on the sidewalk in front of businesses. And it's required. I know this is so boring. I'm sorry.
No.
So there are some times there that were put in that are reasonable. And so after the snow is falling, you've got time to remove it for the succeeding day.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Unless it snows all night and day and after and the day after.
Yeah. Yeah, and people understand. Yeah, sometimes you can't keep up on it until the event's over. We don't want people to use salt. There are other chemicals that can be used. No electric fences. No matter how people complain, we are not going to have electric fences. It doesn't belong in a city.
Back to that B, the salt substances, there's the stuff they use now. It would be used as commercial people.
I think it's potassium permanganate.
So
I think
it's not corrosive?
I don't believe so.
Okay.
Yeah. No, I don't believe it's a salt.
Okay. Yep. Strictly salt. All right.
Yep. No salts. No barbed wire fences except at the top of the fence, which is typical in industrial areas. No, I mean, you know.
It's up on top of another fence usually.
That's right. under attractive nuisances, no person can permit machinery, equipment, partially demolished items, or other devices on his property which are unattractive, dangerous, or accessible to children. We had a report recently of somebody dismantling a single-wide mobile home within a mobile home park. Mm-hmm. Jagged steel, no entrances blocked, that kind of thing. This would take care of that.
That's why the fence went up.
Yeah. Snow plows, things like that.
Yeah.
A lot of people keep them in their yard.
I know, and you need to take the key out.
Yeah.
You know, I know people will just leave the keys in or have a device so you just push the button, but we really can't have that because if it's accessible, a kid will try it. So people have to be very cautious about those things. The same with lumber or logs piled so
well,
that...
there's a difference, though, between having it on the property and having it, having the key in it, you know? I mean, is there some way...
Well, it can't be dangerous if it can't be turned on. So are you thinking we should talk about...
Well, dangerous and accessible.
Yeah.
That would probably address that.
Well, why don't I just put it in? Heavy equipment. Stored heavy equipment. Shall not include keys and ignition. And we can work on that a little more. But at least get the
concept. That's the idea. They,
yeah.
You know, they just need to make it so that it's safe, you know.
Right.
I mean, they could have it chained or something, too, you
yeah.
know. So it couldn't be.
Yeah. And we keep our backhoe in gear, so if anybody ever tries anything, it can't go anywhere. You know, it's...
A lot of people would think about that, but then a lot of people might not either, you know.
Yeah. So stacking lumber logs... if kids want to climb on them, you certainly don't want them to be the kind of situation where they could fall on a child.
But everybody stacks logs.
I know. But let's say something's 20 feet tall and it's looking horrible. And then we have the right to come in and say, you need to lower that to a safe distance, that it's unstable. And we would be able to do that. We're not going to have time to go check how many logs and pieces
right.
of wood people have stacked. But if we see something crazy, then we can deal with
then it. Then it allows you to do something.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then there's an exception. It doesn't apply to construction projects if adequate safeguards, fences, and barriers are put in place. The next section is nuisances affecting public the public peace. Radio interference. What we want people to do is to have their hobbies, but we don't want people to be experimenting with radio frequencies that open garage doors, cause it so you can't use your phone. There are all kinds of things that people can play with to create signals and frequencies that cause problems. The FCC will eventually take care of those things, but if we're aware of something, we would have a way to deal with it. Okay. Trees, shrubs, and weeds. So if somebody's growing something to an unreasonable height, it's a fire hazard, or it's just filled with Russian knapweed, we've got a way to deal with that. We can warn people, and in the worst case scenario, we can hire somebody to cut it and build a person.
Okay, let me ask you a question on that.
Sure.
What do we do about these bank foreclosed homes that the bank has done nothing to them?
Right.
They're just sitting. They've been sitting for years. There's dead trees.
Mm-hmm.
There's trash accumulation. There's weeds this high. Obvious fire hazard.
Mm-hmm.
And the bank, in actuality, is hiding who owns the property.
Yep, that happens.
Oh, it happens. It happened right next door to me.
Mm-hmm.
I have one next door. I called the number. They have a phone number on the window. I called it, Bank of America. They said, oh, well, we don't own that anymore. We sold it. Who'd you sell it to? Confidential, we can't tell you.
Huh.
The new owners refused to register it with the county recorder as to who owns the property. It's still registered as the foreclosed person who left.
Wow.
How do you get
yep.
to who's responsible to get them to clean the mess up?
And this is what I'm going to work on with Jeremy. There are some loopholes in the foreclosure law about where liens can be put into effect during the foreclosure process. And so I'm going to have to work with Jeremy to see who we can lien. And if you lien the property, does it matter who owns it or not if the property has an active lien against it on the city docket? That's a Jeremy question. I don't have an answer for tonight, but I will.
They can't sell it, but can you force them to pay for it? That's the thing.
In some cases, but there, we dealt with this in Bend. There are some loopholes, and Jeremy will help us find the best way to deal with
it. My main concern is that right on the property line next to my house, there's a large pine tree,
mm-hmm.
and it's got the bug real bad in the bottom, and it's leaning towards my kitchen.
Ooh.
And
Has it been moving?
Huh?
Has it been moving?
No, but it's if we get a real strong wind, if it falls, it'll fall on my house. Well, I went to the sheriff and I said, "What do I do?" And the sheriff said, "Well, you got two choices. You can do nothing, which is what I've been doing, because I can't find the owner. I told the sheriff, I said, what about if I just go in there and cut the goddamn thing down?
Oh, it's a trespass.
Sheriff said, we don't care if you cut it down or not, but if one of our cars drives by while you're doing it and you're not the property owner, you're going to jail.
Yeah, don't do that.
Yeah.
Let me know what the address is, and I can probably find out who the property owner is.
Okay.
Yes, email that to me. You've got my email.
She does.
Send me the address. If you don't, I'll get it for you.
I don't know how they've treated the foreclosures in Oregon, but in other states, you know, they've set a precedence now that they can go in and clean the property up and build, put a lien against the property, no matter who owns it.
Yeah.
And that lien, of course, will have to be settled when it's sold.
Yeah.
And that your city or county or whoever will get their money back. And that's what they say, get the loan in, make the correction, get the lien on the property.
Right. Yep. That's what I hope we can do.
You know,
yeah. Yeah, I think we'll be able to do that. I just need to double check.
Right.
Let's see, there's an exception, obviously, for basic lawns, trees, and bushes that are part of a landscape. The owner or person in charge of property can't permit the limbs to interfere with the use of a sidewalk or roadway or obstruct driver's view. In those situations, because it's a public hazard and threat to the public health and safety of the community, the city needs to go in, if they can't get the owner to cooperate, and remove those. For example, somebody's got a willow growing in front of a stop sign. It's got to be dealt with immediately. And so we'll do that. And this footage is 8 feet above the sidewalk and 11 feet above the roadway. I will double check. I think ours is a little different for clear vision in the zoning ordinance, and I'll change that.
Where is that?
In C, in the very last sentence.
Oh.
The trimming clearances.
I
think I had 8 and... I think I had 12, but I want to double check that.
I thought it was higher than that.
Me too.
Standard now. They used to have it 11, but I think it's higher.
Yeah.
Because most motorhomes and trucks are 12 plus.
Oh, yeah.
So.
Yeah. Damaged and dismantled motor vehicles as a nuisance. You can't permit, if you're a property owner, any damaged or dismantled motor vehicle or parts of a motor vehicle to remain on the property in view of the public. Such damaged or dismantled vehicle and parts of a motor are declared to be a nuisance. This is meant for non-commercial areas. For example, if you have a car repair shop and you have these things behind a fence, in the proper zone, that's fine. That's what's meant to be there. So this is for residential properties.
You should probably state that.
Yeah, I need to make that clear. Residential properties, and does not apply to properly zoned businesses. Does that sound okay?
Mm-hmm.
Zoned and permitted businesses. Okay. Then we get to wrecking yard vehicle storage. And it's important to note that if you have a bunch of cars and you're not permitted as a wrecking yard, you can't do it. So if you're in a residential zone and you've got damaged or dismantled motor vehicles exceed on the property for more than 72 hours, that's a problem. and you'll be classified as a wrecking yard. And if you're not permitted in that zone to have a wrecking yard, you're going to get a ticket, because that is the only thing that will control people from collecting cars. If they're truly collectibles, they need to be stored inside somehow. And if we're serious about getting rid of cars as an accumulation, it's the only way we're going to be able to do it.
Unless they're behind a fence, right? I mean, any amount of cars they want, as long as they're out
there. Yeah, no ordinance said something about a fence, so.
And I've got public view.
Yes, as long as if they're shielded from public view, that's, from what I understand, that's kind of standard. It's okay.
Okay.
They just didn't want in our neighborhood off of Maston. A guy had 5 or 6, 7, 8 cars around it.
Mm-hmm.
People complained, and Klamath County said the only way you can keep them is put a fence around it. So I put a nice fence around it.
What do you do about fencing a driveway?
He's got a gate across it.
A gate that you can or cannot see through?
You can't see it through it. It's a wood gate.
So to fence it, then they would have to have a non-see-through gate on the driveway.
Now, let's think this through.
Because that's in view of the public.
Right. But let's think this through. You've got a neighborhood, you've got houses, regular things in the front yard and backyard, and then a lot in the middle has 25 cars behind a sight-obscuring fence. Is that okay? Because first of all, it's an attractive nuisance as far as I'm concerned. Is that what you expect in a residential neighborhood, an accumulation where technically, if we think about what we're talking about, every inch of that residential lot could be covered with a car. Is a fence adequate? Or maybe I'm going too far in saying you can't have anything, two or more damaged vehicles. You can't have more than two or more damaged vehicles.
What about vehicles that run?
That's different.
What if a guy has 10 cars and they all run?
That's fine. There are usable cars. There's no prohibition on that.
Licensed?
Yep.
Have to be licensed?
Have to be licensed?
And operable, yeah. But
is
if we're
stated someplace?
I'll make it.
That's important.
I think I had it then.
I could see somebody that restores cars or something having several cars in their yard to pull parts off to restore one car.
Okay.
At some point, they would, get rid of them, I'm sure, but we do have a lot of car collectors, and but I don't know,
I don't think it's too much to ask a person to put it behind a fence.
Yeah, no, I don't care.
Keep it outside of people.
Yeah. In a garage or something.
Yeah, in a garage. Or
so how many dismantled, damaged, non-operable vehicles are okay behind a fence?
I don't know.
In a residential zone, I think if you go beyond 3, it's trouble.
I think you're probably right.
I'd agree with
that.
Yeah,
3
is a good number. Because collectors usually don't have. That's not true. See, a lot of them out in fields.
Yeah.
Edsels.
Yeah, you do. But
in a city, 3 is more than enough.
And if they're inside a structure, we don't care.
Yeah.
It's just the ones that are outside that cause problems.
Right.
And we can work more on that, but
three is a good number for outside.
Okay, junk.
But they still have to be out of public view.
Yes. Yeah.
And then any of the cars that have to be licensed.
Yes.
That are sitting there. And
that's
okay.
Right. And I'll get that language in there. Junk. You can't have it outdoors on a street or lot or premises or in a building that's not wholly or entirely enclosed, except for the doors for ingress and egress. Junk means all inoperable motor vehicles, old motor parts, abandoned motor vehicles, old machinery, etc., etc. Glass, paper, lumber, wood, waste, discarded material.
Had boats in there.
Boats?
Watercraft.
Oh, watercraft.
Now you know, of course, that one person's junk is another person's treasure.
I know. But There is a zone
that
for that.
Can be behind it.
There's a commercial zone for that.
And they can put it behind a fence and they can have three of them.
Yeah.
There's a lot of boats, you know, junk boats sitting around.
Oh, yeah.
And we have an extensive section in the zoning code about where you can have a junkyard.
And that doesn't mean if you turn them into a flower thing,
no.
It doesn't count, right?
No.
That's yard art.
God, no, we're not going to, you know, somebody with petunias and tires, no. Okay, doesn't apply to a licensed junkyard or wrecking yard. Here's one that'll raise some eyebrows. Notices and advertisements. Placards, notices, bills, advertisements, posters. You got to have permission from the person or owner of the property. So we all know if somebody staples a garage sale sign on a post, we're not going to be going out and harassing them. They end up going away, they dissolve. There isn't much we can do about that. But if somebody's blocking the right-of-way or causing a problem because the placard's enormous and it blows around, then we'll deal with that. No person can scatter, distribute, or on public or private property any placard or similar thing. Handbills will not be considered placards. So we don't want people just tossing things around with the hope that somebody's going to read it. So we'll take care of that. A lot of times concerts will do that, and it's a big nuisance. It doesn't prohibit the distribution of material during a parade or public gathering. So if you're having a parade and you want to hand out that there's free hot dogs around the corner, you can do that. And it does not supersede any of our sign codes. So we've got a way to deal with that.
Yeah, this, as far as political signs and things like that, that's rest in the sign code, so we don't need to.
You don't need to do it here.
Okay.
Okay. Then we've got the legal language that says when you discover these things, they may be abated by the procedures that come next in this ordinance. So now we get into the procedure and how to fix something. So the first thing is the complaint investigation. If we get a call, we go out, we document what we find, we send out a warning letter, mailed or personally served. And the warning letter includes all of everything in B, descriptions, the direction on how to fix it, the whole ball of wax, and what the risk is if they don't fix it, the cost of abatement, and a lien placed against the property. 10 days after the warning letter, and I've got police officer, I'll just say officer or representative of the city, shall inspect the premises and determine if things have been fixed. And then if it hasn't, then you go to the citation section and then it goes to court. Now we don't have a municipal court here. We may have to establish a hearings body. And that's something I've got to talk to Jeremy about, because at one time they were going to hire a judge, and I don't know whatever happened to that. They had a retired judge that was going to be available.
The city was?
Uh-huh.
I never heard of that.
Yeah.
If the city needs a judge, I'll...
You can't be everywhere. You'd have to make a choice on where, and well, I'd like you to stay
to school,
on the planning
commission.
I'm a mediator.
That's funny. There's an R missing after officer in D. And these are all the legal things about abatements. You got to post the property, and you have to make sure the person's received notice. And then as you go through all of these abatement procedures, the most important thing is if there's a immediate threat to public health and safety, you've got to deal with it right then. But if there's not, and it's more like an accumulation of garbage or something like that, you have to go through and make sure that there is a place for the person to be heard. It's really important that there is some sort of hearing or process where the person can come in and say, hey, you know, here's why this exists and why you shouldn't find me and all of those reasons that we may not know about.
Well, I think it would be helpful too, and I don't know if that's something you'd want to put in there, but if there we had some sort of a list of resources for people that mm-hmm. had a legitimate, you know, they're unable, they're not in good health or whatever.
Yeah.
That some resources that they could go to get help. So.
Do those even exist?
Well, I do know the NROTC, they do a lot of
okay.
things. You know, sometimes the teams at the high school.
Okay.
And they have the Band of Brothers, too. They do things. I don't know. Maybe some of the churches and stuff.
This would be great as part of our outreach to make this a full package, as if people would agree on a case-by-case basis to be on a list where they could help. Let's say an elderly person broken a hip, they can't, you know, get their garbage to the landfill, and for a week could somebody pick it up and take it out. You know, those kinds of things would be useful. And I think the city could organize that pretty effectively.
Yeah, I would.
Okay, last but not least, what happens when you're ordered to court? And it's the same thing, it's another hearing opportunity, but it does have a fee. And since we don't really have our own court, I've got to figure out with Jeremy if we can go just send that to circuit court. So I will find out about that. And we will have to develop a lien docket at the city and then be able to charge an expense for administration, which is tracking all the paperwork and all that business. And I've put in 10%, which is more than fair. If the city council, through its budgeting process, sees that it's more than that, we can increase that.
Yeah, you usually, isn't it 15?
I just started with 10 since it's a new program. We're going to have to ease people into a lot of this. The rest of the abatement procedure is about the hearings part I was talking about. And it's fairly strict, but it's the kind of thing that is necessary. We're not going to make a lot of friends with this program, so it's really critical that the public education part of this process, the working with the chamber and other business entities, as well as homeowners associations, you know, anybody in the community that speaks to a large audience has to be supportive of this process, otherwise it won't work. It'll just be another story in the paper on how the city's beating down on people. So we have to have that support. Let's see. 33 and 34 are just separabilities. But section 32, I might have been too harsh here. I've got each day violation of a provision constitutes a separate offense. It's usually left to the people who refuse to listen to the letter, even talk to us about anything. And for example, let's say somebody lit their manure pile on fire. It's 10 feet away from a home. It's the heat of summer. It's 100 degrees out.
They can't burn them.
And, well, even still, you know, you need it taken care of. Every day should be an offense.
Yeah.
You know, that's how you get it taken care of. And those are the fees that help take it away. And I'm sure there are better examples. It's the only one I can think of. Because I've lit manure piles on fire.
In the middle of the summer?
Yeah, they don't go out.
Not here in Deschutes County. You can't have a fire in Deschutes County.
Oh, I'm sure it was a different county now that I think about what I just said. But yeah.
It's no burn right now.
Yeah, it just smolders like an icky thing. So this, in context, with the revisions we talked about, would be what we'll put into a program to get to the city council as an action item that we've completed. Rick is very adamant that this get done. What I plan to do next is kind of package it with, we need the chamber support, the next step will be public outreach, and then the public workshops, and then the hearings. And I like to do those things joint with the city council just for expediency, so they can hear your thoughts as well. And so I think that would be the next step, is I will email to you the whole package. And assuming you're okay with this, let me know if you want to review it at another meeting before it goes to council, or with the revisions I've discussed and the packaging that you'll see, if that's okay to forward to council for a joint work session.
Don't we have a joint work session?
You have one for the TSP coming up.
For the 8th?
Yeah, of the 9th.
I think that's something with the revisions. Maybe give us a copy email, we can report back on it.
Make sure, yeah. Make sure my copy goes to Patty over here.
Right.
She can print it up for me.
Gotcha.
Yeah, actually, I'd rather come in and pick mine up, too.
Okay. Patty to print. So I'm going to, after this is bundled up, and I've talked to Jeremy, and I've got the kinks worked out legally, I want to bundle it up and then, with your permission, select a few dates that would work for a joint work session or before a council meeting.
I think that's good.
Okay. And if you think of anything else in the meantime, let me know.
Well, I think that the most important aspect of this whole program, the most important aspect, is that not only the business community, mm-hmm. but the residents know what's happening.
Yep.
Because I'll tell you right now, you're going to have public meetings.
No surprises.
And nobody's going to show up.
I know.
Nobody's going to show up. The business community will show up, yes. But the residents aren't going to bother. We're going to get a few.
But you talked about putting in public notices and papers and stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, and posters and notices on the water bills and sewer bills.
You're going to have to send every address in this town a postcard or a letter saying, this is what's going to happen, mm-hmm. and
ordinances are getting ready to go into effect.
Because otherwise, we're all going to get tarred and feathered and run out of town here real quick. Yeah.
Oh, there's going to be a significant reaction.
You better believe it.
There's also going to be a positive reaction.
Yep. Yeah.
Yeah.
You're forgetting about that.
All these people that are complaining about things not getting done.
Right.
And that's the way you might want to, you know, there's been a lot of talk about things, you know, now we're finally ready to start mm-hmm. enforcing, you know, the ordinances that we've spent years on developing. But,
so, I think that, you know, you got to admit the majority of the people abide by our rules. And
that's true.
Only the minority is going to squeak loud. Yeah. What is the next step? Say we get this all approved and everything. When can it be implemented?
As soon as there's a budget to do it.
And that budget for the city is what?
July 1st.
But I mean, we have to get an enforcement officer, or what are they going to do there?
Well, you probably, there are two things. You would develop a contract with the sheriff's office to do the heavy lifting on places where we don't feel comfortable going onto property. You'll need a sheriff to do that. Mm-hmm. And so that person would accompany a city person, whether it's Rick or myself, mm-hmm. To deliver a citation mm-hmm. or to inspect the property. Mm-hmm. And so that's one expense. The other expense is, do you have a person who's solely on board to do code enforcement? Most cities utilize their existing staff and don't hire an individual code enforcement officer until they're well above 50,000 people in a population.
We're contracting to Deschutes County, though, correct, on all this stuff?
You're contracting to Deschutes County for land use planning.
Right.
But they do not do much code enforcement at all.
Here.
Yeah. And they've told us they won't.
Here we are.
Yeah.
Okay. They have done some.
Yeah, they've done some, but
not very much.
Not very much. No. And they don't intend to.
They're not. That's right. They're not going to.
Right.
Yes. Okay.
So.
It's just the way it is.
So it's up to us if we want to quit.
They only have one code enforcement officer in Bend. He ain't coming down here.
Yeah.
That's all there is to it.
And we didn't hire him until the population was over 50,000.
Well, yeah, but you and Rick are not going to want to go out to these things.
On the bad ones, like that one on the entrance to the community, you bet. I think both Rick and I would be there and get that baby done.
And Rick's been out. He's been out with the husband, too.
Right. Yeah.
That I understand. Yeah. That's the flagrant ones. But Joe Smo's got a pile of horse manure over here, and he's got to complain about it. You know, somebody's got to go out and talk to him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's why we need somebody from the you know, city council, city, public works, or something. We have to get somebody designated to do that.
And when we have our joint hearings and joint work sessions, we're going to have to talk about that. If the community wants to hit these things head on and get a lot done, you're going to have a person to do that.
Right.
There'll have to be a priority list, of course. And the approach that... If you're going to have a campaign to do this, it should be beautify Lapine, not crack down on Lapine.
Right. That's correct.
Right.
But beautify Lapine. Yeah. Mm-hmm. How can we make our city look better?
Yeah.
Yep.
And
well, you can call it anything you want.
I know.
It's still a crackdown.
Yeah, but
you can call it beautification.
But it's all perception.
Anything. Yeah. That's true. But it still is. It's telling the guy down the street, you got to clean that mess up.
Remember, he's the minority.
And he's been there for... Well,
he's still a minority.
Not where I live, eh?
Well, I mean, to the total residents.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Sure, they stick out like a sore thumb. But.
Well, and the people who are doing things that aren't zoned properly, businesses and residential zones that are not home occupations, that are truly a business, that's a real high priority. As well as threats to public health and safety and the entrance to the communities.
By the way, we're on violation. What happened to the meat processing guy?
Well, we have an appeal hearing October
30th.
He's
appealed they handed down.
Okay. He's appealing to the city council, right?
Yeah.
To our city council? Yeah. Okay.
The what?
I don't think so. It's appealed to the city council, so it's under their sole authority. So they've called it up, and so they'll be the appellate body hearing it. You guys are welcome to attend. If you'd like to attend, I'll notice it.
But we don't need to worry about quasi-judicial or anything like that.
They will make the final decision.
Okay.
When is that scheduled for?
October 30th.
October 30th.
If you want to attend, we'll do the proper notice so that people know. You won't be making any decisions.
No,
that's what we'd like to be.
But you'll be there as a body.
Right.
Yeah, because he wants to present new evidence.
Yeah. Let's see, Patty, notice PC at October 30th meeting. Otherwise, I just finished 8 or 9 different application forms that Rick is reviewing now. So soon we'll have all of our land use applications done. I'm almost done with the fee code. I'm going to use a process where for the more complicated things you'll pay a deposit and then the rest will be time and material. Some of that deposit may be returned to people if the expenses in producing the land use decision are less. But I think for the first couple of years that's a good way to get a feel on what it really costs us to do the job.
Okay. All right, shall we move on?
Yes, I'm done.
All right, other matters? Gloria, you had something?
Yeah, well, this kind of goes along with that. I noticed on Jim Elliott is, you know, he's one of our tax people here in town, and in fact, he's my tax person, but he's moving his office from where he was over to Homestead Tavern, where that was.
Just there. A change of use?
It's a total change of use.
Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. The county turned it down the first time. The land use review.
Commercial to commercial.
Well, this is the revision or the he you know appealed and it was 25 pages long.
Oh. We are not doing that. If that helps you. We
I hope not, because I thought, you know, I mean, here he's going from one business to another. It's actually an upgrade of the type of business.
That came from Deschutes County?
Yeah. And when I started looking at it, it was 25 pages long.
This
and I'm going, that doesn't, it, that's not, when we talked about planning from the very beginning, we wanted to simplify things.
Right.
And I realized there has to be some legalese in there. But if nothing else, I would really like to see a simple form that tells people what they need to do.
Yes.
And keep it like one page. You know, this is what you're going to have to do. And I just don't understand why it has to get into such a...
Why would the county turn it down?
I'll explain that. And this is a problem in the planning industry. The county is self-insured. The county fears more than anything appeals because they don't have any insurance for that. They have to pay for everything themselves. So what ends up happening is the planners will write laborious findings on every single aspect to make sure that every I is dotted and T is crossed without any assessment of whether there's risk at all. So this is a problem. It's a problem in Bend too. Other cities are not good about controlling it. The law states in Oregon that when you do a land use report, when it's subjective, like a conditional use permit or variance, that you write findings. And your findings are simply the analysis of how the person's met the criteria or not. It does not have to be pages and pages long. If you know something's risky, like BioGreen, yeah, the report's going to be 100 pages long because we already know we have appellants who want to fight it. If it's a little guy moving his business, the risk
business.
Yeah, he has no offensive
orders. There's no heavy equipment. There's no
manure.
Yeah.
You know, that's a simple thing. Is the risk big on that? No. So you got to have a field general in charge to tell your planners that, look, on the simple things where the risk is little, get the baby out the door. Should be 5 pages. He meets the criteria because there is no increase in impact. It's going from commercial to commercial and hook up the sewer and water and, you know, whatever else needs to be done so it meets code. It should be as simple as that. On the big ones that have much more risk, because you already know there's appellants, they're going to be longer because you want to reduce your impact in appeal costs. So things have got out of hand. Here they will not be that way.
Well, now, can't he appeal?
Oh, he did. And I mean,
can't that appeal, just like the slaughterhouse guy, go to the city council? Or
no, well, it wasn't totally denied. It was that he had to do a lot of different things.
Oh, I see.
And
okay,
I mean,
okay. Yeah. I understand.
You're talking about a business that, yeah. Well, I mean, of course they don't know it.
I know.
But I mean, the parking lot was a mess. I mean, a lot of cars parked there. The drainage wasn't that great. But I mean, he is going to fix it up, I'm sure. I haven't even talked to him about it. But I mean, they went into great detail about the parking and the water and the, you know, all
yeah.
these different things. And I'm thinking, he's just going to move, you know.
I know.
Put a couple of divisions in there, make some offices and...
No different
than it was
before.
They're making a big deal out of it.
I know. They want with
covers your mouth.
Well, yeah. They want everything fixed with the next person going in. And in a small community like Lapine, that has to be phased. It cannot be all concurrent just because somebody's got a different sign on the building.
Well, and I saw this as something that would really be driving businesses away
yes.
if anybody wanted to buy a business and had to go through all this stuff here.
Well, there's a property management gal who went through the same thing off of...
Huntington. Yeah.
Right, the little building.
Yeah.
Yeah, and
yeah.
it was like, what?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I just was wondering, because I could not, for the life of me, understand why it would be like that. And I thought,
well,
man, is this what we're going to do?
No.
You've got to
afford to do that.
Government as government
yeah.
is a massive,
oh, I know.
Bumbling bureaucracy that these guys that are sitting down and are writing 25-page reports, what they're actually really doing is they're protecting their own job.
Yeah.
That's exactly, well, and you can't say that because it's
Well, you can say
not
that.
Not correct,
I say
but
that.
It happens to be the truth.
Well, I don't think we serve the public by wasting their time and money because 25-page reports cost thousands of dollars in permit fees.
Well, and chances are he was delayed. And, I mean, you know, we're getting into winter time. Is he going to be finished now before it's time for him to start doing his taxes?
Common sense would say that you send him a one-page letter saying these 10 things have to be done before you can occupy.
And that's what I did not understand, and I was hoping that you would say what you said.
Well, I'd rather the money go into fixing the property than paying a permit fee.
Yeah.
And, you know, for Lapine, we're not served by
that. It's unfortunate.
Well, that answers my question.
When we have full control, we won't do that.
Yep.
Okay. Any comments, Roland?
Nope. I'm good.
Gloria, anymore?
No.
Deborah, anything else to say?
Nope. I'll get my work done on that.
Okay. Our astute audience, do you have any comments that you'd like to make?
I have a question and a couple of comments. Deborah, all of these ordinances, do they apply equally and the same to all of the zoning types?
Yeah. There'll be a few places where I need to make sure they're copacetic. It's where distances are measured for clear vision. I've got to make sure I'm using the right words.
Yeah.
And numbers, sorry.
As far as the getting addresses for places on that are foreclosed on, the county's usually pretty up to date on mailing addresses.
No, I talked to the county recorder in Bend, and she told me that the original owner can sell their foreclosed property to someone else, and whoever they sell it to does not have to record it until it goes on the market for sale. So that piece of property I was talking about is still recorded in Bend under the name of the person who lived there who got foreclosed. And they don't have to record it under the new owner's name until they put it on the market to sell it, which they're not. There's two of them. They're not for sale yet.
I'm going to talk to Jeremy about that.
Yeah.
And she had no idea how I could find out who was.
Wow.
I see lots of properties that are listed as under a bank name or whatever.
Yeah.
Well, that's the owner then.
No. The property was foreclosed by Bank of America, and they sold it to another financial institution. Mm-hmm. And they will not disclose the name of that financial institution. And that financial institution has not gone to the county and recorded that they own it now.
It's almost like buying a car. I can buy a car from you. I can leave it your name for
not
a while
before
it's
my name.
It's the same thing.
Yeah.
Same instance.
Yeah. Why they do that, I don't know.
And while we're thinking of things and solutions, if that tree looks like it could possibly hit the right-of-way.
No.
No?
It'll hit my house.
Shoot. Because if it was a threat to the right-of-way, we could take care of it.
It'll hit my house. And like I told the guy at Bank of America, I said, you know, it's going to be a lot cheaper if you send somebody down there with a chainsaw, cut it down, and put a new roof on my house.
Yeah.
He says, we don't really care. Well, so there you are. Karen, anything?
Were you finished?
Oh, I'm sorry.
I was just out for fun. The one you were just talking about where the tax guy wants to move, that's the former Homestead Tavern on William Foss Road.
Mm-hmm.
My gosh.
I know.
I drive by there hundreds of times a month. Mm-hmm. And that is such a good place for that. It's such a little trafficked street, even with the housing down there and everything. And even with the video store right there, there's plenty of parking. When they had a tavern there was plenty of parking.
Mm-hmm.
I have no idea what they're... And I never did see any problems with drainage, anything different than what we would see anywhere around here. Nothing.
Well, yeah.
I mean, you know, there might be something that needs corrected, but...
I
have a hard time picturing that as something that would hold this out.
Well, like I said, I know what the place looks like, so I mean, I just couldn't see it. Now, down there, they have no idea where Homestead Tavern is or anything.
As far as drainage goes, the county ought to down here to fix Lake Lapine.
Yeah.
That's their responsibility, and they won't do anything about it.
Yeah.
Anything else, Katie? Karen?
Thank
you. Okay. Okay, now I'll take a motion to adjourn.
I so move.
I second.
Aye. Thank you. Do that. Best part of my day right here.
No.
I will send you that address, okay?
Please.
Just a minute. Yep.